Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. What a day in the Champions League. A little later on, Jan and Steve will be here to reflect on Manchester United's 5-0 thrashing of Leipzig. We'll start, though, in Turin, where it finished Juventus 0, Barcelona 2. Frank Leboeuf, Ali Moreno and Craig Burley with us to discuss this. Craig, you looked at that starting 11 from Ronald Koeman, no Ansu Fati, Griezmann back. But boy, Barca got the win. What a great response after that Clásico defeat.
Clásico mauling, I think, was more the correct terminology. But yeah, it was a perfect night for them because they looked pretty solid themselves and they come up against a Juventus side that were, let's be frank about it, shambolic. You know, both sides going into this with, what, 2 wins in 5 games, so not in great form, coming off the back of that Clásico, as you mentioned. And let's be quite frank, this could have been 5 or 6. This should have been 5 or 6. Yes, Juventus had some offside goals, but if you've watched Alvaro Morata over the last few years, the guy was born offside. I mean, if you remember him at Chelsea, he got caught offside so many times, so he's got to time his runs better. But when you think about the chances, not only in the first half, but the second half, where Barcelona were trying to walk the ball into the net rather than just absolutely kill this team off, that was the only negative from their point of view. And here we have a team who had a makeshift or an inexperienced centre-half partnership. Then they had a makeshift centre-half partnership with Frankie de Jong going back there. And they were never really in any trouble. So if I was a Juventus fan, I would be concerned.
We'll talk about Juve in a moment, Ali, but from that Barcelona perspective and the way in which they limped their way to the full-time whistle in El Clásico, I thought it was striking the way they came out right from the off in this game.
So are you saying that there is a connection, Dan, between the fact that Bartomeu is gone and the energy and intensity shown by this team on the field?
I really
hope
not.
Is that what we're trying to establish here?
You really hope not, though, don't you, from a fan's perspective? You're like, it shouldn't matter who your president is if you're going to pay in 100% or 50%.
Well, maybe you don't want to make that connection, but I will, because this was a different version of Barcelona. And In fact, indeed, a different version of Lionel Messi as well. More as a withdrawn player, more as a playmaker. And how many times did we see Lionel Messi get the ball in between the lines, turn, go at the defenders of Juventus, draw the interest defensive from Juventus, draw those players in, and then lay the ball off to Dembele, lay the ball off to Ansu Fati or Griezmann or whoever it may be. We saw that time and time again, running at defender, running past defenders. We have not seen that consistently from Lionel Messi over the last couple of weeks. We certainly saw that today. And had it not been because Dembele, for one, could not finish a chance or decided that he was going to take an extra touch. Had he not scored the first goal, which, by the way, was a deflection, I would have told you this kid needs to come off the field at halftime, because he can be such a frustrating player from a Barcelona perspective in that you see flashes of what he can be, and then he cannot make a simple pass or a simple decision or the correct decision in the final third. How many times does he need to take a shot on goal and he decides to pass? And then the times in which he needs to pass, he decides to take the shot on goal. Regardless, though, Barcelona overcomes all of that, and they were far superior to Juventus. Now, that there's something to be said about Juventus and how poor they were today, but Barcelona as a whole, there was intensity, there was energy, there was a good feel and a positive vibe and a positive intensity about this team that we hadn't seen. And so it's impossible not to make the connection, because what has changed from Barcelona over the last couple of days? Nothing else other than the president of the club. And so therefore, yes, it is clear to me that there is a connection between the energy and the feeling within that locker room with the president out and what we saw today against Juventus.
Frank, is it wrong of me to say that's pretty pathetic? It's not a coach, it's a president. And I understand you're not happy with the way in which the club has been run, but as professionals, surely it shouldn't make that much of a difference.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I agree with Ali. That what you have to see is that you have to make the connection with the fact that Bartomeu left the club and the fact that the players feel more freed by the circumstances and played better. And the first guy to show that was the captain, Lionel Messi, and that was clear for me. They felt like we saw something different. We saw a different spirit into the team, and it worked very well. But I agree with you, he's pathetic because he's not the coach. He doesn't influence whatsoever what's going on in the dressing room and the way the team have to play and the players have to play. So I don't understand why they needed him to leave to play better. Maybe the question of wage, 30% less that they Bartomeu asked for from the players. But it doesn't give me an excuse to be so bad like during the Clásico and be so good tonight. So very strange club, very strange team. I think we have to wait before making a statement. What's going to happen next weekend in La Liga? And maybe wait for another day for the Champions League before saying, okay, we found back what we saw for years with Barcelona because we're not sure about anything about that team.
Craig?
Yeah, but I think the biggest factor was Juventus. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, when the rotten apples leave a certain club, then you do get a lift. But let's not get carried away. Had Barcelona been playing at Bayern Munich or one of the real top teams, they would probably have lost, right? You know, particularly when Frankie de Jong goes back to centre-half. I mean, you're not going to stop, you know, a Liverpool or a Bayern Munich or a team like that with that defence. The biggest factor here was that Barcelona played well, but were allowed to toy with one of the biggest clubs in Europe. And that's what they did. They toyed with them. I mean, they played through the middle of the park. Like Juventus had no midfield. And it was only the fact that their finishing was poor. I mean, Griezmann hit the post in the first half. Messi was trying to walk the ball in. I mean, they had so many chances in that box. And so for me, yeah, it was a much better performance. And there will be a lot of happy people that there's going to be change at the club. But boy, they got lucky in terms of playing this Juventus team at this time, and they just exposed the Italian champions' deficiencies.
How much can you give them an out that there was no Cristiano Ronaldo, Ali?
Well, of course you have to say it and you have to report it, and it makes a difference. You take Cristiano Ronaldo out of any team, and of course it's a huge gap that you have to cover. But my surprise about this Juventus team is how lifeless they were. Regardless of whether Cristiano Ronaldo was there or not, is how little fight there was to them. No real tackling of the ball, no real challenging through the midfield, so much space and so many periods of long possession by Barcelona where Juventus were nowhere near the ball. There were moments in the game which Barcelona were walking the ball around the field and Juventus were not even 2 or 3 yards close to Barcelona to try to get back into the game, almost as if they had accepted their fate. And you know what? It's not going to happen today, guys. So, yeah, a couple of goals were called offside, and let's move on to the next game. But this is not a surprise, though, because it is what we saw against Crotone last weekend. It is what we saw against Hellas Verona as well. We continue to see a team that we are told, well, Pirlo is just trying to fit in some pieces. He's trying to work out what is it that he wants to do with this group. What I would tell you, watching from the outside, is what is he trying to do with this group? Because there is no real structure or balance to the team or planning place. It's just guys running around. And eventually, when you run into a team like Barcelona that can move the ball around, that can play the ball, that can pass the ball, well, you look like you did today, that you had no idea what you were doing, completely disorganized, without any sort of spacing, proper spacing between the lines, and eventually Barcelona simply took advantage. I thought Juventus today were awful, and more so than anything, they were lifeless.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree. Not too much to add. I think maybe there was a player who used to play for Juventus and now plays for Barcelona who was missing in the midfield, in the middle of the park, in fact. It was Pjanic. Pjanic was really a fantastic player when he was playing for Juventus, and they're missing him. He was the leader of the midfield. He was maybe making sure that the team was right balanced, which is not the case anymore. And when you see Morata at front, when you see that player plays for Juventus, after what I saw from when he was playing for Chelsea and other clubs before, I think Real Madrid as well, I don't know, it's like a player, makes me feel of Higuain, you know, playing for Chelsea as well, for Juventus, for Real Madrid, the same type of player, but they don't belong to that level that we expect from Juventus strikers, or Chelsea strikers, or Real Madrid strikers. And when we see those kind of players playing for one of the best clubs in Europe, I wonder where is the real level of that team. And that's the question mark that everybody has to have. for Juventus, because it's not the level that we used to see. Of course, Ronaldo wasn't there, but it's not Ronaldo who made them play by today. It's Asad Ali. They were lifeless. They had no balance. They don't know where to go. They average, in fact.
Well, that average side currently sitting second in the group. Barcelona very much in control of Group G. Two wins out of two so far for Ronald Koeman's side.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What a result at Old Trafford. Manchester United thrashing the Bundesliga leaders Leipzig by 5-0. Marcus Rashford with a hat-trick. Greenwood and Martial getting the other two goals. Jan and Stevie join us. We'll go to them in a moment. But, Craig, what a performance this was from United.
Well, actually, I would be slightly different on that. I would say what an absolutely superb result rather than a superb performance, if that makes sense. Because I think the difference in the two sides were, you know, Leipzig were lightweight up front and United were able to bring on the heavy hitters. And I mean by that, I mean, obviously, Cavani, you know, Fernandes, Rashford come on off the bench and look so sharp. By that time, Leipzig were chasing the game. So, you know, for long periods in the game, it's how United have approached these matches against good sides. They've sat in, they've tried to get a good shape, and they've hit on the counter-attack. And they certainly did that in the second half. So it wasn't a swashbuckling performance. The scoreline would suggest it was. In my opinion, it wasn't. But it was an absolutely superb result because they were so clinical in that final third when they got in the penalty box.
Jan, you are more than happy to tell everyone on Twitter that your boy has coached a team now who beat PSG last week and then Leipzig this.
I think that is the fact of sport, but I agree with Craig. I mean, the fact of sport is they beat PSG away and now Leipzig at home. He beats the wonder kid, Julian Nagelsmann, 33 years of age, tactical genius, apparently, but they beat him 5-0. But we heavily criticised Manchester United in the first half. I don't think they played good in the first half. And obviously, Ole Gunnar saw the same thing. Not only did he swap the players, getting the big guns in that he wanted to rest, but also they made the pressure a bit higher on the field. They took the ball more. In the first half, they just let him roll the ball. And you can't do that. You can't do that at home and being Manchester United. But what they did in the second half has to be said, a big compliment to Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. That last 45 minutes was one of the best performances I've seen them for a long, long time.
Stevie, was Danny Higginbottom right? Is Ollie the man for the job?
Well, I would say, I would suggest it was even less than 45 minutes in the second half. Maybe try 25, 30. When was the first substitution? Because up until then, Leipzig had outplayed them. No question. You know, De Gea's made two good saves that could easily have been goals. And then, of course, the changes completely transformed the game. So it's a strange one. They got outplayed and they won 5-0 for long stretches of the game. So basically, what we saw tonight just tells us that going forward with the likes of Rashford, Martial, Greenwood, they can be absolutely devastating. But in the middle of the park, we still don't know what we're going to get every time they step on the field.
I think that's a good point, Dan, that they are a very powerful side in the final third with the options that they've got. You add Cavani into that, who, you know, is probably not going to play. Well, he's definitely not going to play every game because of his age. But he's probably the best finisher, arguably, that they've got, certainly the most experienced. But they are going to give themselves, or try and give themselves, a base either with a back four or a back three. They're going to try and solidify the midfield against the better teams, both domestically and in Europe. And then they're going to rely on the pace, the power and the talent that they have up front. And when you see young Greenwood as well, who we know how two-footed he is, we know he's quick, we know he's got a trick, we know he's had a troublesome time of late with one or two decisions, certainly that he made in international duty. But whenever that young lad is going to pull the trigger, I always feel he's going to hit the target more often than not. And that's a great attribute to have. And then when you throw in the other players that I mentioned, then you've always got a chance. But, you know, Stevie's right. They're really going to outplay the better teams in the middle of the park. And so they have to get their defensive structure right. And then they have to hope that their forward players, who are good, very good, have a good evening. And that's what they've got. And that culminated in a bit of a mauling for Leipzig, who were all over the place at the end. And they've been in good form. Is it, what, 4 wins and a draw in the last 5 games? And yet, as that second half went on and on and on, they were so dishevelled, it was frightening. And also, they, without Timo Werner, certainly, they looked so lightweight up front in terms of with the possession they had. They did not create enough chances.
How much credit should Solskjaer get, Craig?
Well, listen, results take the pressure off. And, you know, when you rest players and you still get big results, then you get a pat on the back. So I don't know what Danny said, but I've got a fair idea regarding Solskjaer. But it's a long season. And at the moment, he's on a bit of a high. You know, they started the league poorly, looked awful. Then they picked up a little bit with that good win at Newcastle, had a very good evening in Paris, and have had a very good evening again in terms of the results. So they're positioning themselves well, but it's a long old season, and you know it'll all come out in the shake-up. I don't believe they'll be in the title race, and let's see how far they go in the Champions League. But the way they play, the way they set up in the bigger games, they're almost ideal for the cup competitions because they sit in, and they hit in the counter-attack. So the European competitions might be something to look out for Man United this season. But they won't win the Champions League.
I think, boys, you started with your conclusion now and then you work yourself backwards. What you do when you put up a team, it's not all about the team with the 5 substitutions now. It's not all about the team you're starting with. It's also with the team you're ending with. What Ole Gunnar Solskjaer saw with Manchester United is that around the centre-half, they had trouble with their centre-half, and they had to build up the sitting players, if that's been Fred or McTominay, I don't care. But he needs to build up around the centre-half, and he has done that. And I'm not going to defend a Norwegian coach. I've been sitting in the studio now just beforehand, criticising him for the first half, and people get ballistic on me of Norwegian TV. I think first half was terrible. Not terrible, but it was not good at all. But that you're saying when you're winning 5-0, and you can talk about the results, but a great, great coach like Klopp or Guardiola, when they win 5-0, you don't start with that, analyze that just only a result. That was a great, great win for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It was a great win for Manchester United. What I did in second half, that was brilliant playing forward. And playing forward is also a part of being a football team.
The game lasted 80 minutes. So he's a genius for keeping everybody sat in the backside for an hour when against anything else, they might have been 2 or 3 down.
Who said that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a genius? I'm just saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer tonight and Manchester United tonight beat RB Leipzig 5-0. They are leading the Bundesliga. In the first game of the Champions League, they won away at PSG, winning 2-1. They were in the Champions League final a couple of months ago. That is fact in sport. Then you can start with your 22 minutes or your 27 minutes. That is fact. That is football. That was 5-0. And I agree, Craig. I know you would have said exactly the same about Jurgen Klopp, but tonight they were winning 5-0.
No, and I don't disagree. And I am under no circumstances... taking Man United apart here because that was a superb result, as it was in Paris. I'm merely painting the picture, or trying to paint the picture, of how the result came about. And I don't think I'm wrong in saying that, you know, once again, they were outpossessed, but they've got the result. I mean, it wasn't as big a gap in terms of possession. If you looked at the Barcelona and Juventus game when it was 60-40, it wasn't like that. But what I'm saying is, when United play against the better teams, and they did it to Man City with great success last season, at least twice, maybe 3 times, I can't remember, City absolutely swarmed all over them, dominated them, outplayed them, but didn't take the chances, and then United hit them with pace over the top. So it's not a one-off. I'm just saying that's the way they're trying. This is not a swashbuckling Man United side This is a Man United side, Jan, that when they play the better teams, and in all fairness to Solskjaer, he's realised that, and you're right, they cannot go out and take teams like Leipzig, teams like Bayern Munich, teams like PSG, teams like Man City and Liverpool. They can't go head-to-head and get the result. So they have to do it a different way. It's not the Man United way that we've known over the years, but it's the way that's got them the better results in the bigger games. And so far, it's working.
Just a word on Marcus Rashford. And if you've been following this story during the lockdown in the UK, he led a campaign to make sure that those who would normally get free school meals got them. It's a week off in England, there's no school. He once again drove this campaign. The government voted against it. However, restaurants now have come together and are handing out free school meals to kids who otherwise would go hungry during this holiday. The reason I bring this up, because you do that and then you score a hat-trick, Craig, at Old Trafford in your day job. What a 22-year-old this kid is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think when you look at somebody, you can sort of paint a picture. And what an amazing young man he is, you know the grounding that he must have got been brought up as a youngster is crystal clear. He clearly has his feet on the ground. You can really criticise him for on-field tactics. He wants to help people away from football. He wants to use his notoriety, his fame, his fortune as a young man to help others. And on top of that, he's a bloody great footballer as well. So there's not a lot wrong for that young man at the moment. And you cannot be anything else but pleased when you see somebody utilise their talents the way he has. But, you know, most of us, when we were his age, were not even thinking about stuff like that. We were off doing what 22-year-olds do, right or wrong. But we were just trying to live the high life. But he's doing things that most of us wouldn't even have dreamt of. And on top of that, he's doing great stuff on the field as well. So I can't speak highly enough of him. I just wish there was more like him out there rather than some of these Charlie Big Potatoes that go around earning fortunes and not doing a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I 100% agree with Craig. And just to strengthen that, it's also the fact that you do this, you get all the attention from different parts of media. So you are doing a lot of work, physical work for these people. Still, you manage to concentrate. Still, you manage to concentrate to go out there doing a hat-trick in the Champions League. Not only a great, great person, but also a great striker. And the way he took the goals today was marvelous. And in an interview just after the game, he said, "Yes, I saw the linesman holding his flag up, but I knew I was onside." So, I mean, this is a new generation of people thinking of VAR and a great striker. And I just feel it's so good for him because it's so easy to criticize him. If the team is doing bad, he should concentrate more on the stuff he's doing on the pitch instead of off the pitch. He is managing both things, and I'm proud to be a part of a big football family over generations. That sometimes in our football life, these kind of role models grow up around us. A 22-year-old, I mean, what a role model, what a man, and England must be so proud of this man. Certainly I am, and I'm a Norwegian.
Great. Do you think just briefly, Dan, that Marcus Rashford has any talents in TV backdrops? because if he has, he could nip over to Norway and sort out Jan's.
Well, maybe, and what's his makeup skills like as well? Because, Jan, you've got a lot of makeup on. How bright are those lights in Norway?
I was offered after the show to take it off, but I said, "No, keep me on like Keeping Up with Kardashians. I'm ready to sit with Steve and Craig and Dan. So I would love to have so much makeup on." And thank you for that crop behind me, Craig. I can borrow yours. Are you sitting somewhere in a cabin in Canada?
I wish there was. I'm in my basement. I've not been out of here for about 2 months.
Good grief. Hey, at least you haven't got Stevie slanting backwards scene. That is it. We are done. Thank you very much, guys. Just take a look at how things stand then in the group. Manchester United top with that away win against PSG, coupled now with that impressive victory at Old Trafford.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Chelsea picked up their first win of this year's Champions League campaign with a 4-0 victory over Krasnodar. Hudson-Odoi, Werner, Ziyech and Pulisic getting the goals in the game. Stevie Nicol and Ian Dark with us to reflect on this. I'll tell you what, Ian, it didn't feel like a 4-0 for much of the second half, did it?
No, it really didn't. When it was 1-0, you were wondering whether Krasnodar were going to grab an equaliser. They put on a little bit of pressure, and in the end, I think the scoreline did flatter Chelsea, but a 4-0 win away from home in the Champions League, with Timo Werner getting his first Champions League goal for the club and Ziyech getting his first goal as well. Well, you can't argue with that. So they're handily placed now with 4 points out of six.
Yeah, that's it, Stevie. Nick, job done. 3 points. Get back to England.
Yeah, listen, that was the object when they arrived in Russia. And they've done that. It looks comfortable on paper. As you said, it wasn't. So if you're going to look at it from a result point of view, then it was absolutely fantastic. Now, if you want to look from a performance point of view, then I guess it was the same old Chelsea. You know, Chelsea for me, I can't remember the last time they actually controlled a game, because they just don't. I think they try and get the ball forward far too early. They don't have any real quality sort of build up. They don't change the tempo of the game. It's all 100 miles an hour. And when you play at 100 miles an hour, you tend to give the ball away a lot. And that's what Chelsea do. I think that's their biggest problem. It's not that they don't have ability, and it's not that they won't score goals and create chances. And even clean sheets. They kept a clean sheet today. But it's the way they go about it. I think that's going to be their Achilles heel.
Do you agree, Ian?
They've kept three clean sheets in a row now, one against Sevilla, one against Manchester United away, and this for the first time was the first time they've kept a clean sheet without Thiago Silva in the team. So they'll be encouraged by that, but I understand what Stevie is saying. I think they're very much a work in progress. He's still trying to get all those talents to gel. And one issue I can see is Kai Havertz has come into the side, and he starts just about all the time. Mason Mount is a very similar kind of player, but a very talented one. So is there room for both of those two together? Mount came on tonight. That's one of many things. I think Chilwell's settling in okay, but it all feels like Frank Lampard has got this star-studded cast, and he's somehow trying to be the director of a great movie, and it isn't quite convincing yet.
Pulisic coming off the bench, getting his first goal of the season. Stevie, what did you make of his cameo?
Listen, if you're a coach and you bring on a player, and he's a forward player, the only thing you can ask him to do is put the ball in the back of the net. Mm. And he scored, so he gets 10 out of 10. You know, the fact that Ziyech scored as well is great. It's great for Frank, but it also gives him a bit of a headache. He has got so many players going forward. You've got Hudson-Odoi that scored. Now, you could put that down as an own goal, because the goalkeeper was absolutely embarrassing on it. But the fact is they're all scoring goals, and there's only so many spots for so many players, which could be a problem, because whilst you're winning games and everything seems okay, every single time you change the team, then it takes a little bit longer to get real cohesion. So, yes, it's great that Pulisic scored, but it also gives Frank a bit of a headache.
But some always say, don't they, Stevie, this is a headache the managers want.
Yes, that's true, and I guess if you want a headache, it's who do you put on that you know is going to score and you know is going to create. I guess the biggest headache for Frank is what goes on behind that forward line, because that's where all the problems are. So, yeah, a good headache to have, but it's only one of many that Frank has right now.
He doesn't know his best team at all, does he, Ian, at the moment?
Well, he's spoiled for choice, certainly in those forward positions. You remember last season, Olivier Giroud hardly got a kick of the ball until February. And then Frank Lampard suddenly decided, you know what? He's quite a useful player. I could make use of him. He came on. I think he scored 5 goals in his last 6 starts. and became the number one striker in that number nine position. Again, this season, he's hardly getting a kick of the ball because Werner is the flavour of the month and they're having to adapt things to his particular style. I mean, he's a very, very fine player and he's going to get a stack of goals. But, you know, Giroud is another of those players. I worked it out. They've got eight players for those front four positions. So you could say it's a nice problem to have, but keeping everybody happy might be a problem for Frank.
So that win for Chelsea puts them level on points with Sevilla at the top of Group E after the Spaniards registered a 1-0 victory over Rennes. Elsewhere, Dortmund left it late, but they got the victory, guaranteeing themselves the first 3 points of the campaign, a 2-0 win over Zenit. Meanwhile, Lazio could only manage a 1-1 draw away against Bruges. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned, though. My guests on Extra Time, Stevie, Frank and Craig, where we talk about that Benzema video. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Look at this lineup: Frank Leboeuf, Stevie Nicol and Craig Burley. We've had a lot of tweets about Karim Benzema, including this one. Ever told a teammate not to pass to another teammate? In case you missed this story, this was Benzema at halftime in yesterday's match against Gladbach, was caught telling Mendy in French not to pass to Vinicius, saying, "The ball, bro, on my mum's life, he's playing for the other side." Stevie, is this a big deal? Does this happen a lot?
Oh, it doesn't happen a lot at all. No, this is... I mean, this is atrocious, is what it is. You know, for one of the senior players, and obviously one of the leaders of the dressing room, to go number one and tell anybody not to pass the ball to another player, and then to turn around and say that he's actually against us. I mean, I'm not quite sure it gets any worse. It's almost saying he's a double agent. So no, it doesn't get any worse. And of course he's telling one of the newcomers in Mendy and one of the younger players. So what's he going to be thinking? I'm being told not to pass the ball to one of my own team. I mean, absolutely disgraceful.
Frank, do you agree?
It is disgraceful, but I think it can happen, you know. And I would have done differently. I would have gone to Vinicius and I say, "What's wrong with you, my man? You know, it seems to be like you play against us today. So wake up and, you know, make sure you're gonna do the right thing." But he went to Mendy, who played on the same side of Vinicius. So must be a reason why he did it. I think it's not very nice, especially doing it on the corridor where you will have all the cameras and the microphones. No, it shouldn't happen. But it can happen. And I think remembering Zola saying to me, "You know, Frank, don't give the ball to Craig Burley today. It doesn't feel good." But that's it.
Yeah, but I wasn't 19 or whatever he is. And that's the difference here. It's you know, it's bad enough to if you've fallen out with an experienced teammate and he's having a bad day. But it's like Benzema's never had a bad game or a bad season, and to do it to a youngster who is clearly feeling the pressure of the situation at the moment, and you know, we've seen big players crumble at Real Madrid, is really out of order. But I can top that, but not in a sense of such high profile players. But I when I was in, before Frank got to Chelsea many moons ago, I was, as a youngster, I think I was about 17 or 18, and I was playing in Chelsea reserves, and we were playing at home, and we had a young Scottish lad similar age to me playing left back, a young guy called Steve McGill. And the coach, because back in the day they didn't really do politically correct and all that nonsense, shouted on during the reserve game to the goalkeeper at the top of his voice, "Don't throw the ball out to Steve McGill," who was a left back. Now, how does that make you feel when it's not your teammate is not telling, it's the coach that's telling the goalkeeper not to throw the ball out to him because he was having a shocker? But it really shouldn't go My on, God. To be honest.
Stevie, Benzema, kind of...
Dan. I think it's important that we put this in the right context. Listen, we've all during a game had a teammate who's having an absolute shocker. And so what you do is, if there's another option, then you take the other option. That is perfectly acceptable. Anybody would accept that.
Right.
But it's not acceptable to go around telling other players on the team, don't give him it, and then say he's against us. That is completely unforgivable.
Stevie, Benzema pretty much unrepentant today on Instagram saying, you know, the dogs will bark, the number nine will keep playing. If you were Zidane, how do you handle this situation?
Well, I tell you, the only way you can handle it as a coach, you get them in front of the whole squad and you give them a dressing down and tell them that you're in charge, you're running the team, and how dare you disrespect any of your teammates. That's the only way, because clearly by the response of Benzema, he thinks he's Bertie Big Spuds. He thinks he's the man. He thinks he's the big shot. With that answer, I mean, a humbler person would have explained the way that we try to about if somebody's having a bad day. But to turn round and double down and act as though you can't be reproached about anything, the only way is to dress him down and make sure he does it in front of the rest of the team, and he has to apologise as well.
But you don't feel that's quite Zidane's way, Frank?
I'm not sure. I don't know what happened in the dressing room, and I won't talk, you know, without knowing. Maybe Zizou said something to Karim. But I agree with Stevie, it should be said in the dressing room to make sure that it doesn't happen anymore, and that Karim will explain what he really wanted to see and or to say to Vinicius. But again, as I said, Benzema is a leader and he's a vice captain of Real Madrid. He could have gone to Vinicius and say, "Hey, my man, we love you, but wake up. Today you're having a shocker, so wake up because we need you. Otherwise, we don't give you the ball anymore." That would have been straightforward, that would have been simpler, and that would be nicer.
Let's move on to would love Stevie's thoughts on the play of Maguire, who seems to have his confidence back, and the 1v1 play of Bissaka. Wan-Bissaka has to be the best defensive right back on the planet. Never gets beat and reads angles very well. Not great attacking, but is a true defender. Your thoughts?
No, absolutely. The best defenders, they feel it when it doesn't go for them. And he clearly feels it. He doesn't want to get beaten. And it matters to him. So I can't argue with that. You know, Maguire, I think it's a little early to turn around and say Maguire is back to where he was before. It's been a couple of games. But it's been a couple of good games. You know, Manchester United today against Leipzig, for example, without that back five, would have been up against it. Whether it was a combination of the back five, including Maguire, being solid and good and making good decisions, or just how bad Leipzig were going forward in the attacking third, but a combination of both. So, yes, I guess it's yes so far to both. Good couple of games from Maguire. And yes, Wan-Bissaka enjoys defending as much as anything else.
Frank, is Alvaro Morata just unlucky with his goals disallowed by VAR? It was a hat-trick today, wasn't it? Or should he work on his positioning more?
Yeah, you can score five goals as long as you are, you know, offside, you're offside, so it doesn't count. unlucky, I don't know. I mean, we saw him so many times, you know, and I think Craig mentioned it, you know, playing for Chelsea and being offside so many times, and games, goals have been disallowed. And I think that guy has to wake up. I mean, he had the chance to play for the biggest club in the world, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, Chelsea, Juventus. I mean, who has been that fortunate without showing too much? And you have the chance to be served, you know, by great players. And if you're all the time, you know, offside, even if it's just an inch, it's too much. Yeah, and you waste times and you waste chances to score. And today, that was a waste three times. So, no, he's not unlucky. He has to be careful.
They were close, though, Craig.
Yeah, but I mean, he was the third one. He was a little unlucky, but you know, we've seen it time and time again with Morato. He goes, he makes the runs at poor times, and he didn't have to go so early for, I think it was the second offside decision, which was actually a good finish. But we saw him, for those that watched him at Chelsea, he did it so often it was unbelievable. Look, the guy's not a natural goal scorer. Go back through his clubs in the last six or seven seasons, and he's got like six or eight, or I think his best was 15 in the league. He's not a natural goal scorer, but he's had some heck of a moves, you know, for somebody that's not pinging in 25 goals a season. But he doesn't time his runs. He hasn't timed his runs particularly well, and I can only see him being a squad player there when everybody's fit.
Stevie, do you think Liverpool should sign Connor Cody back from Wolves, or is it too risky because he doesn't play in a four at the back?
That's a big breath.
Ooh, that's a tester. That's a tester, though. You know, he's been a huge part of why Wolves have done well. His distribution at the back has been fantastic. I suggest he's more of a sweeper than an actual centre-back, and actually Virgil van Dijk does both of these things. He's a sweeper and he is a centre-back when it's needed. So I wouldn't go and sign Cody, but that's not to say he hasn't been fantastic for Wolves.
Craig, completely off topic, we've been talking about grudges over the last few days. Shaka still remembers a journalist who wrote a bad article about him. Stevie's got a couple of players that he knows that he still very much holds a grudge against. Where are you on the grudge list? Is there a journalist that wrote something bad about you, or a player that did something you didn't like that means you'll never forgive them?
No. Lots of journalists wrote things. We've all had it, and you know, you meet them in a hotel foyer if it's international games or on a flight or whatever it is. But I went on to work with a lot of those guys, and quite a few of them, I said, listen, I know you wrote that and you did this and that's your job, and I don't have a problem with it. So I really feel when you move into the media, it's quite hypocritical then to have a problem with journalists because they wrote something about you, because we're all going to have or should have a strong opinion on players, and that's what they did with us. So, no, actually, I don't. I know you probably angled that question because you thought I was going to probably be the one with the most grudges, but actually, I don't. I don't have an issue with any players I've played against, and I don't have an issue with anybody who wrote something derogatory about me, as long as it wasn't personal, i.e. family or something. If it was football, wasn't an issue. You just got to suck it up and take it. And there's nobody in the our business that I don't speak to because or I wouldn't go over and speak to if I met them in a press room that said something bad about me or wrote something bad. Because guess what? We've all had bad games at times and people have got to do their jobs.
Why are you smiling, Stevie?
That's surprising.
Hey, Dan, can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, how about we turn it around the other way and put on Twitter, anybody with a grudge against Craig Burley, could you please get in touch? you could probably fill a show.
I think
right. every Celtic fan in the world, only Chelsea fan in the world, and then add a couple of million more on top of that.
But that's fans, Stevie. That's different. You know, fans are fickle. They've got the old brain blinkers on. You know, they only see it their way. They want to hear. They want you to say what they want to hear. But in terms of, you know, I'm sure there's players, because when you go into the job and if you do it strongly, there are players. And listen, I didn't like it. I didn't like it when I played, but it was part of it. But, you know, I had a couple of guys wrote some really stinging stuff over the years. But I don't you know, even somebody wrote some stinging stuff about my early broadcasting, and I still speak to them. It's part of the job. I don't really hold grudges in that respect.
Mark Hottie's on every day. You got to talk to him. Frank, what about you and grudges?
I had one journalist when I was the first time that I was called for the national team, who wrote a half page in L'Equipe saying that I had nothing to do with the national team, that I was already too old, I was 26, and that he could name like six players who could have been at my place, where on the six players, I think four were injured. So when I would join the national team, Aimé Jacquet said to me, I don't want you to answer to him, otherwise you're going to go back to your house. So I just went to the guy and I shook his hand and I said, well, I'm Frank Leboeuf and I want to make sure, because you don't seem to know me very well, so I'm going to show it to you on the field and I want to introduce myself. I think he didn't like it at all.
Go on, Frank. That's a good response. Get that World Cup medal and shove it in his face. Right.
Exactly.
Stevie, we all know the qualities of Aaron Wan-Bissaka as a tackler, but who was the best tackler you played with and against? Big breath.
Oh. Well, it depends. There's a lot of different ways to... There's a lot of different ways to slant that. I mean, there was plenty of guys that tackled it. It wasn't them that got injured, shall I put it that way. I mean, just raw power. I mean, Stuart Pearce was a guy who just was fearless when it came to challenging. He'd be a guy when you went for a ball with him, you knew you had to go back with every single thing you had, otherwise you were in trouble. You know, older guys like Jimmy Case were feared by, you know, if you went for a 50-50 with Jimmy Case, then the only thing that would happen was, A, he would get the ball, and B, he would probably take half of your legs with him at the same time, so not many people went near him.
Well, as a youngster, Stevie, I played in the reserves at Chelsea at 17 or 18, and I played against Jimmy Case, who, I might be wrong, but I believe at that point was in the reserves for, I think it was Southampton, and he scared me.
Yes.
I mean, he scared me. I thought to myself...
He scared a lot of people.
Everybody in the Premier League is like this, I'm going to get a different job. I'm telling you.
Craig, what was it about him that scared you?
Yeah.
He was solid.
Right.
Well, he was obviously a very... he was coming towards the end of his career, and I was, you know, at 17, I wasn't fully, you know, I needed to get on the weights, put it that way. I was a bit skinny. And if he clattered me once in the middle of the park, and I was like, oh boy, that hurts. And I thought, I got it. This is how strong these guys are. Some of them, and he would be, you know, well into his 30s at that point. But as Stevie said, he was absolutely rock solid. You know, Stevie mentioned Stuart Pearce. His thighs were enormous, but he was aggressive and he would be vocal and he would snort and he'd tell you. But one of the best ones for tackling and reading the game and probably going to ground not very often was Dennis Irwin at Man United. Fantastic going forward, but a great, great defender. You very rarely saw Dennis on his backside because he was either in a good position or he was able to read it properly. So guys like that, really, when we talk about the Trent Alexander-Arnolds and all these guys, you know, Andy Robertson, who's not a bad defender, you know, but people like Dennis Irwin and Stuart Pearce did all these things, you know, going forward and then defended brilliantly as well.
Do you know, Dan, you're talking about defending as well. You know, we're talking about Wan-Bissaka earlier. Now, I'd have to say that he does end up on his backside too many times. You know, Craig's talking about Dennis Irwin. You know, you very rarely saw Dennis on his backside. And that's because his starting position was so good. So if there's one thing Wan-Bissaka needs to work on, it's his starting position so that he doesn't have to go sliding into players. Because that the fact that you're doing that so often, your starting position is in the wrong spot. But as long as he still makes the challenge, then he's getting away with it. But as soon as he loses half a yard of pace or any sort of pace at all, then he's in trouble. because of his starting position.
Frank?
For me, that I played with, well, I played against as well, was Vicente Lizarazu, playing on the left side, full back. That guy was like a dog, you know, biting your calf, you know, during the game for the 90 minutes. And after his career, he became a Brazilian, he did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and became European champion as well. So that guy is a real fighter and never gives up. Fantastic. But Stuart Pearce is the best example for me of a defender capable of going forward, scoring goals on free kicks, having a fantastic shot, going forward, and being an outrageous defender because he was completely fearless and you were scared and he was coming in front of you. Fantastic defender. I mean, I played once or twice against Nottingham Forest. That was something unbelievable that I will always remember.
Great stuff, guys. Thank you very much. There is a concern about... Yeah, go on, Stevie.
Just the last one. You need to ask Shaka about a teammate of his. A guy called Avery John. He actually played for me at the Revs. The people in MLS, nobody would go near him because he would take everything. They wouldn't get near him. Avery John, you need to ask Shaka.
Okay, I will do. Stevie, there's concern about your background. It seems to be sloping more than normal. Is everything all right? The house foundations haven't gone or anything?
No, it's probably me. It's probably me that's sloping. I've been sat in a chair so long today.
Hey, stop itching your leg. You're on the TV.
Hold on. Is that me? Do I look level yet?
Yeah.
No, you're going the other way.
No, you have to go on the right.
Oh, don't do this again.
Oh, yeah. it's better.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's really solved it. Thank you very much, guys. We'll be back here tomorrow for more. Till then, goodbye.